wife who got back on the road again.
Back again.
Dude.
Like front of baggers.
Back home again.
Back home again.
In
Indiana land.
All right, Wiffle fans of Indianapolis and otherwise, we're finally back. Dirt Yard Dish with the long-awaited return since the winter offseason. We're back with season 6. This is episode 1. Hard to believe we're getting into our 6th season of this podcast. I'm your host, Rudy Lyon, here to break down everything February Free Agent Frenzy. So essentially the purpose of this episode is to just give you a recap of how our 2-week free agency event went, a sneak peek at each of our rosters as they stand currently before the rookie draft and opening day coming up in April. And then I'll give a little bit of my own hot takes, cold takes in a segment called Dish Best Served. That's Dirt Yard Dish Best Served. So we'll just get right into it. I will give you the salary cap number that each team is at currently, how much space they have remaining, kind of a breakdown of what value each player is worth on each roster, and with a little bit of like analysis at the end once I finish recapping all 6 teams. So we'll start in order of finish last year, and we'll kick it off with the reigning champs, the Hounds. They are right at the salary cap ceiling of 130 with their 5 players. That means they have space for an inexperienced Whiffler, like a rookie or new to the league, to add. Managing again this year in his 3rd year back with the Hounds is Dylan Jones. He is a 20-point or dollar value, however you want to view that, points or dollars. He's a 20 salary cap hit. And the obvious choice to return to the Hounds was reigning MVP Mike Whitty. He is 90 points. Also returning is Coby Taylor, coming off of his rookie year. He is at a 10 value. New to the roster this year are 5-pointers Keegan Coy and Tristan Dudas. And as I said, that leaves space for a rookie or a waiver wire add in some capacity later on in the season. Moving on down the line, we've got the Moonshots, who just came up short in that 3-game thriller in the Dirt Yard Classic back in August. They are also maxed out at the cap ceiling of 130, largely thanks to their top 2 tandem, similar to the Hounds, equaling a total of 110. That's manager Will Smithy, the reigning back-to-back national Whiffler of the year, who picked up his partner in crime as expected, a 20 value hitter in Tyler Gregory, who plays much more value than that 20, considering he is a national team defender and just an all-around great athlete out there at the Dirt Yard. He probably earns his keep at about 25 or 30, I'd say. If he pitched, he could be north of 50 if that was a skill set of his. But moving on down to guys that are new to the Moonshots this year, you've got Mitch Unversaw, second-year player, young guy, good athlete at a $5 value. Jay Wilsey coming over also at a $5 value in free agency. And then longtime 10-year veteran fittingly gets a $10 value, Cody House. And then the one rookie spot open there. So 5 players at 130 cap points used up for the Moonshots. Now moving down to the 3rd place finishing team, My Yakkers, who just came up short of making it to that Dirt Yard Classic in the great elimination game against the Moonshots. You have myself managing my 7th season, 8th year overall in the league, 45-point value. Returning also at a 45er is Aiden Palmer, looking to build off of that. Already an incredible season he had last year, even amidst breaking his hand. So we'll see if he can even surpass that projected number of value. An acquisition I'm looking forward to having that really solidifies our lineup, and taking a guy who was a former manager of a team with the Pork Pistols going under this season, Thomas Hopkins. He's now a role player, but we don't view that as a knock or a negative. He's just dropping down in responsibility and taking the role of being an on-base guy, leading off, hitting his slow pitch bombs, offering protection in the lineup if we want to switch things up. I know he's historically been a leadoff hitter, but there's flexibility in this lineup, as I'll get to the 5-pointer returning to the league after a 2-season absence and 3 total years, Sawyer Mitchell. with the fast pitch session season going to weeknights. That frees Sawyer up to play again, as a lot of his weekends are dedicated to slow pitch softball, as I understand it. So this is a little bit more conducive to his schedule. He's at a $5 value due to his two-year hiatus. He's one of the all-time greats. We'll see if he still has it after 2 years off. My hunch is he's going to pick it up real quick because he's been swinging a bat, even though it's at a big yellow ball with a metal bat. Not looking to pitch as much as he used to. He was a guy that had some good movement and was on the board, but we know that those years have since passed him. But if, you know, emergency comes up, we need a guy to toss some in there. I'm sure Sawyer could be the guy for it. And lastly, as we do have a vacated spot for a rookie or a waiver wire ad, we have Mason Capuch, who is going to be part-time, not going to be able to play in phase one or phase three, and will be sparing in phase two. Solid pitcher in his rookie year with the shorts, and he's already vowed that he is going to improve upon his appearance last year, and he, and to some degree, took the NWA tournament by storm with some of his performances. So I'm expecting great things of him when he is able to make some of our weekend games for the fast pitch session in June and July. But for the most part, he'll be leaned on as like a third arm to give Aiden and myself some rest. Down onto the eight balls, they are also maxed out at their 130 cap, bulk of that coming from new manager Reed Warner, who was an 8-ball last year, and Mike Speak Sr. has decided to pass the managerial responsibility onto Reed, who was once a manager before with the Hounds and returns into that capacity. Joining him is Mike Speak. We thought maybe this last season was his swan song, retirement, but the change in responsibility and the change in the schedule, much like Sawyer, works for him. Reed is an $80 value, if I didn't mention that already, and Speak is a $10. Austin Aulis rejoins the eight balls after a year away with the Swamp Dragons. He's a $20 value there, and pairing another hitter, that mid-range hitter, is Alex Gurchiff, who is a new member to the all-hitting national team, third team, I believe, and really outplayed his value last year in that kind of murderer's row moonshots lineup where three guys had double-digit home runs and 30 RBIs. And really, to me, Gurch was the most reminiscent of a cap casualty, that you hear that buzzword around NFL free agency time where teams are looking to cut cap so they can move on. Well, this is obviously a little nuanced and different, but if he was maybe $5 less, he might be a moonshot. But that's just the case when you have a team that outperforms their values. It makes it difficult to maintain consistency in rosters. And this is kind of the gift and of player movement that we've created with this free agency the last 3 years. And this now being Gurch's fourth team in four seasons in CCW. So he's leading the league maybe in jerseys collected at least per year as he's consistent there. And also returning to the league after hiatus is Eric Stark. He was a multi-year, longtime member of CCW and then moved out to, I believe, the Philadelphia area for a couple years. And now he's back in Indiana. Now, he's not an Indy, so it's going to be a little bit of a drive, much like the guys from Northwest Indiana make on Sundays. But we'll see how often Stark is able to make the trip to the Dirt Yard for Wednesday night games, slow pitch Sunday games, cup ball games. But we love having Starkzilla back in the league. It's a great look for us. And then that leaves a roster spot open for the eight balls for a rookie or a waiver ad that they can afford with being maxed out in cap. Now down on to fifth, our fifth of sixth team. Mentioned so far, we have the shorts. They're at 120, so they have $10 of cap space to use. Managing that team once again, Commissioner Brandon Dudas. No surprise there. And one of his strategies, it appears, was to get the twins back together, the Dowden twins, Dustin and Dylan, pairing up for a total of $40 35 for Dustin, coming off an incredible pitching campaign, making an all-national pitching team. Great year with the Pork Pistols, even though they missed the playoffs. It was at no fault of his. He absolutely shoved on the back end of the season. And Dylan, he was honestly, I think, an underspoken or underrated element to the Moonshots' run of the playoffs. I know, like, yes, they were a top seed. I mentioned the murderer's row, the three guys that had multiple or double-digit home runs. But he's a glue guy. He's a team guy. He took his walks at the end of the lineup, really actually performed really well in the playoffs, getting some tough knocks, flipping the lineup over so guys like Will and T-Greg could get multi-RBI home runs or just big hits that brought him in. A really unselfish player, and I think a great addition to that Shorts lineup. The second arm in the Shorts roster is Jake Sprinkle. He returns to the Shorts after, I believe, he was the Cy Young winner in 2021 for the Shorts, so this is a match made in heaven. He and Dustin have similar value, both similar right-handed pitchers. They're not going to like blow it past you like a Reed or a Will, but they're on the board. They're painting corners. He's just crafty as all get out. So this is kind of uncharacteristic of historical Shorts teams. They've got two viable arms. They're not necessarily going to be in situations where they just have to outslug and outscore teams. So I think this is good for the league, kind of changing that mantra of what the Shorts have been. Alec Berninger, he returns to the Shorts as a $10 value. Rookie of the Year last year from the left side, does some pitching, does some hitting. Has some good athletic abilities, some talents there, and I think he'll build off of that and can serve as a third arm as well whenever guys are missing. I know there's going to be some conflict with probably Sprink's baseball schedule. And congrats to Dustin Dowden, who just had a little girl, actually. So who knows with having a girl in March what that's going to do with availability on Sundays in April and May or Wednesday nights into June and July. So Bernie will be a great third arm option there. And then the last addition for the Shorts, which was kind of the most surprising, just considering where he's been his whole career, and I'll talk about this a little bit more later, is Connor Morris. He's a $15 value. He can pitch, but he's really just a hitter only, and he's got one of the sweetest, most feared left-handed swings in the league. Another solid bat to solidify that lineup for the Shorts. A really well-balanced Shorts team constructed versus years past. And last but not least, we've got the Stampede, managed by Kay Luker. He's a 25-point value, and this team is also maxed out at the cap at 130. He is, the way I kind of view it and the way these guys coexist together and work together, we've seen it with the Hometown Cup team, the Bird Dogs, Mitch and Cade. They were teammates of mine with the Yakkers in 2022, and I know like that was a really fun team to be a part of, and those two guys in particular gel really well. So love this tandem. Mitch is a 45-point value, left-handed pitcher, left-handed hitter. Really upped his game last year in that eight balls lineup as a hitter and pitcher. And he will kind of prove as a 1A, 1B ace with Holden Palmer, who is a 30-point value. The Palmer brothers both outplayed their value last year, which made it damn near impossible for them to both return to the Yakkers. So I think this is a great fit, where you can almost just interchange the lefty-righty pitching combinations here with the two. Holden looks to be more of a pitcher-only style, and he will certainly be on the board and, I think, consistent arm as that 1A, 1B with Mitch. And then you have D. Louie, who is also a guy who showed out at NWLA. He's throwing strikes. He's throwing multiple pitches for strikes. And he was a solid hitter at the tail end of that Moonshots lineup last year and was a key piece in their championship run. I think he plays a similar role here, where everyone's going to get their fair share of innings as pitchers. And I think that there's going to be whoever's got the hot hand or whoever's just not feeling it, or if there's an injury or someone can't make a certain Sunday for fast pitch or Wednesday for fast pitch, he slots right in there perfectly. So I'm expecting his offensive numbers in particular to go up this year with this this particular lineup, especially with Holden being a hitter only, or excuse me, a pitcher only. And then you've got TP. He separates from the Pork Pistols and from former manager Thomas to join this team. So a lot of lefties in this lineup. You got Luker, you got Bias, you got Punt. And so Doyle's tree out and right, better watch out for these guys. And then lastly, we've got Todd Mudrock, also known as Dawson Murdoch. He is a 10-point value. He's amongst the league leaders in beers chugged at the Dirt Yard, and probably definitely number one in number of Sundays with his shirt off at the Dirt Yard. He's looking to capitalize on those numbers and take back that trophy on those two categories. But also, like, not to just make jokes, he had a great season last year. Defensively, upped his stats, his hitting numbers from his rookie season. I expect that to trend up, and he'll be a key piece for the Stampede. So now that we've recapped all those rosters kind of at length but also in brief, a little bit of analysis here. I know last year we had the decision type deal like LeBron did back in 2010 with Reed Werner, and he got to put the team hats or jerseys on a table, and everything just kind of depended upon where Reed was going to land, and then the dominoes fell. So to me, the biggest domino this season, this offseason with free agency, was Austin Aulis. So not a guy of like huge value like Reed was. You know, he's in the 80 range. I think he was like 75, 80 last year too. But Aulis, and I'll say this too, like, I tried to recruit him hard. I pitched him on the NWA defensive pairing that he and I had, where we, outside of one inning in that tournament, we played great defense together, and I think it would have been an awesome pairing in the lineup as well. He ultimately chose to go back to the eight balls, and then once that happened, the other mid-range hitters started to fall where they ended up. So he was the biggest linchpin or the keystone in free agency, in my opinion, this season. I'd be curious to know what others think about that, if you saw someone else like, oh, we're all just waiting on this other player before we understand what the market looks like. But I think I'll set that market. I teased it a little bit about guys changing teams, but biggest surprise signings to me were Simo and Keegan leaving their longtime rosters. And I know Keegan had kind of a blip year in 2019, which was the first year of our fast pitch era, or FPE. With the moonshots, a lot of people forget that he was on the moonshots, and then he ended up back with the shorts the very next year and has been there for the past four seasons. But he kind of decided to take on a new path for this season, so that's very surprising. Then Simo, who was labeled as an eight ball for life, he's now on the shorts. Really didn't expect that coming through. And I did a little research too. If you ignore the 1 year with the moonshots, Keegan and Simo were amongst a selective group of about six total players where they had played on the same team for the last five, six seasons in the fast pitch era. The obvious ones are me and Dudas being managers of our teams. We haven't changed. Thomas was a manager for those five seasons before the Pork Pistols deciding to disband the season, along with TP. And really, Keegan, TP, and Simo were like the only players that had been consistently on one team for an extended amount of time. So that's kind of just a cool little tidbit about this free agency model that we've created and player movement, because the majority of players are trading places. So just kind of cool, because that wasn't the case prior to 2020. And as I mentioned, there are those four teams that are looking to add a sixth active roster spot, either through the draft or through free agency waiver wire, and that's the Moonshots, Yakkers, Eight Balls, and Hounds. So transitioning here, after being a little long-winded on that. Dish best served, as I teased this segment, and I'm giving what are hot and cold takes. That doesn't mean like they're going to be extravagant or any means, but you know, cold as in bad, although not totally bad, and then hot as in things like trending upward for the league, or things that I liked in our off season, or things that I liked in free agency. So we'll start with the cold. As we mentioned it, you know, something that may be just glaring from outsiders noticing is like, oh, CCW dropped from 7 teams to 6 teams. I don't view that as a problem at all. I think, especially as someone who makes the schedule, scheduling with 6 teams is way easier than with 7, and we incorporated buys last year. But the sad part of that is just the reality of the league is getting older. And yeah, we're bringing in some talented younger guys, but I'd say the majority of the league is over 28 now. Life is happening. People are moving. They're buying houses. They're having kids. They're having injuries, serious injuries, not just like, you know, my arm is ragged. But as an example, talking through some of these departures that we've had, Taylor Carpenter, he had knee surgery in November, and then he had a child in January. So you combine those two things just lining up, and you just got to take a summer off. So it sucks, but hopefully we'll see him out there at the dirt yard slinging some heavies, as he tends to do, hanging with the boys, and maybe he'll appear once he gets his knee up to speed and rehabbed after his knee injury last year. Maybe he'll be able to fill in on a waiver spot on a particular Wednesday night or a weekend. Then you think about the Northwest Indiana guys. We've had a couple that have added themselves to waiver considerations, but understanding the schedule change, just not being able to make the drive for NCAA style rules on Wednesday night, like Ryan Vogas comes to mind. He's got his Leroy League on Wednesdays. He's got Orrible on Sundays. So he's got plenty of wiffle opportunities, and we'll miss him. Maybe we'll see him down either just as a fan, or he'll fill a roster spot for a fill-in like Carpenter. And then you think of guys like Landon Ball, Michael Plord. They didn't register this year. I think I understand that Plord is moving out of state, unfortunately, so we'll miss him. And then a guy like Blake Voris decided to hang it up John Elway style after winning back-to-back titles with two different teams. So can't really discredit going off in the sunset like that. But we definitely hope to see Blake out there as well. Now, with dropping to these 6 teams and losing these guys, and you know, we're going to have rookies and free agents replace them in essence, just as bodies, but not as personalities and what they bring to the league. I am curious how pitching is going to look, because is it going to create log jams with teams, or is it going to create depth? I can speak to the depth piece, where I tried to create a team last year, and it ultimately worked out from a tournament standpoint, where I had Aiden Holden, myself, and I took a backseat on pitching. I was totally cool with it, because those guys are younger, they can throw harder, they can throw more innings, and I'll just fill in whenever there's anyone that's not having it on a particular day, or they're tired, or we have an injury. So I see that being more of a trend, having one less team, and maybe it's going to be a league-wide thing where you're just asking guys, especially early in the season, getting their arms in shape, like you throw two, you throw two, you throw two in a game, innings, and not going full-on sixes, or just curious. I think it's an interesting thing to keep an eye out as this season approaches and gets going. I will also say, on the same lines of pitching, cold is Hounds, or stock down if you want to view it that way. Hounds number two pitching. They've got the ultimate number one, who's, you know, been clocked in the upper 90s, low 100s, in Mike Whitty. But you look at their roster, and yes, I know Kobe's been working on pitching. Dylan can put balls on the board in a slow pitch manner with good movement. Does Tristan pitch? Does Keegan pitch? So they've got some question marks there, and I know they're aware of it. This isn't me knocking them. That's just, they know it's stocked down, and they're going to have to be creative through the draft or through waiver wire. And then my last cold dish served is Austin Aulis. Come on, man. I mean, I know I'm an idiot for trading you to the eight balls, but you go back to the evil empire, the eight balls, to pair up with Reed, who basically have Tim Duncan and David Robinson in terms of height. You guys have two power forwards in your batting lineup that can go back to back to at the leadoff spot in the two hole. Just I don't know. Maybe it's chip on my shoulder. Feel like I missed out on an opportunity, but yeah, all this. Okay, hot dish. Best served hot here. I talked about a little bit with Will's additions for the moonshots. And that's particularly with Mitch Unversaw and Jay Wilsey. And I think really highly of these guys, especially as Yakkers last year. They were pivotal in us competing in that double limb tournament and playoffs last August and got us within three outs of being in the Dirt Yard Classic. I honestly think, call me crazy, and I haven't talked to Will about this, but the way that they performed in that series with Will pitching against us, I mean, they each got like a couple, three hits on them, on Will in that game and set the table for our four-run comeback that ultimately fell short. But Mitch, great athlete, great team guy. I know he's going to improve as a defender. There were some sloppy innings on defense there, but it's going to get, you're just going to get more comfortable with more reps. And there weren't many defensive reps to get with myself and Aiden in the field while Holden was pitching. Jay as well, he is a great glue guy. Like you ask him to do anything, he'll do it. The unfortunate part about him being with the Yakkers last year is he knew like he was arm number four, and he maybe threw twice all season, did well, did what we needed to do in order to compete. But this is going to be his opportunity to outplay his $5 value, and I believe both these guys will. Jay is going to probably be that number two pitcher for them, and he's got multiple pitches. He can be on the board. This is a it's just a match made in heaven, and I really credit Will for kind of stealing both these guys because I was going to be in conversation with them, but they you can't pass that up if you know the reigning back-to-back National Player of the Year hits up your cell phone and you're going to sign on the dotted line. So also hot Hounds rebrand. Even though I knocked your pitching, I love the Bucks colors that you added, the creamsicle and red or burgundy, whatever that is. I'm really curious to see what those jerseys look like in person. Love the old like the classic UConn Husky kind of hound logo there. So thumbs up. I think that was really cool and kind of getting away from the UIndy maroon, black and gray. Just a little bit more creativity there for the new era. It's kind of cool to see a rebrand after a national title run too. So also with the shorts, may or may not know it or noticed it when I read off their team. It's like the all manager team or the all baseball coach team. You got Dudas, he's the varsity head coach at Southport. You got Sprink, who's coaching collegiately at Franklin. You got Simo, who's coaching, just got a college job this past summer. So it makes you wonder, are they going to be over strategic? Is there going to be disputes of like who's the smartest coach in that dugout? My starting rumors of tension, maybe. Will they cater to one another? Like, okay, you're manager for the night. No, you're manager for the night. And then others can just focus on other things. Like, will they, who gets to make the lineup kind of stuff. So, and then last but not least of my hot dish best served takes, I'm not projecting wins. I'm not going to say like who's going to win the slow pitch session, but the team with the most home runs in slow pitch season from April to Memorial Day is going to be either the eight balls with those two giants that I mentioned or my Yakkers. Looking forward to what's upcoming here in the next few weeks. We have completed the rookie combine and tryout. We had about five guys came out to the dirt yard last weekend to show off their skills, to get some of their abilities on film so that managers that weren't present there are able to scout and see what they could be drafting. Truly, it was probably the deepest talent pool we've had at the combine since we've been doing it the last few years. I've got the number one pick, so there's definitely a path for me to screw this up again, as I have in the past. We'll see how that goes. We're excited to get these guys in the league here soon as we lead up to Phase 1 slow pitch opening day, which I've mentioned before, Sunday, April 14th. So we're about 2 weeks away from opening day, getting out there playing some whiffs. All we got to do is get the fields ready. As the batting cage has been completed during that tryout and field day. So shout out. We know that we've got a holiday coming up with Easter this weekend, but please, if you have not yet, make time for the following Sunday to get out to the field and help pitch in with setting up fences or working on the infield dirt, edging the lines, painting the lines, whatever we need done, please get out there if you can. Beyond our phase one season, which will go through Memorial Day, that leads into phase two, which is going to begin on Sunday, June 2nd. Now that is a Sunday. Most of the game days for NWA style rules in phase two will be on Wednesday nights with a couple of Sundays sprinkled in, including our WLM tournament and our Dirt Road Classic, of course. And that leads up to phase three, which the opening day for that will be in September, right after the completion of the NWA tournament in Minnesota, which just announced that registration is now open. So for those of you that are in the league and are wanting to take a trip up to Minnesota and want to be a consideration for one, if not multiple, CCW representative teams to head up to the Twin Cities in the fall, just keep an eye out for that. And then the phase three will be cut ball style rules, and that'll be like a 3-4 week season leading up to UWIFs in preparation for that. So this whole three phase, three style wiffle schedule was kind of the brainchild of Will Smithy. We know he eats, sleeps, and drinks wiffle ball, and did a great job presenting these ideas in his January Holy Commutes podcast. And so with all that in mind, we're kind of transitioning roles here, giving some more responsibility to some guys that have obviously showed passion. And with a guy like Will Smithy, who is the reigning two-time National Player of the Year, and he wants to be involved in wiffle ball conversations across the board, I've decided to pass that torch on to him as the Dirt Yard Dish host. So unofficially, this is my last episode hosting Dirt Yard Dish. I'm sure that I'll be on in future episodes as a co-host or a guest. I've brought Will on multiple times. I wanted to bring him on to have a face-to-face of passing that torch, but this will have to do considering our schedules couldn't line up with Will on vacation leading up to the release of this podcast. So good luck to Will. We'll get him trained on how to do all the podcasting and posting. He's a self-proclaimed, not so tech savvy guy, so we'll get him trained up. But with all that being said, thanks again for listening to this premiere episode of season 6 of Dirt Yard Dish. It's been a pleasure being the host for the couple years that I've been doing it, and we'll catch you at the Dirt Yard on all of our social media platforms, Twitter, X, Instagram, and Twitch, coming up here in April.
I can't wait to get back on the road again.
Back again.
Dude.
Like for the baggers.
Back home again.
Back home again.
In
Indiana land.